From the KBIA Newsroom in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Elena Rivera, a producer on the show. It's the week after the True False Film Fest. True False is a place and a time, but we also think it's a feeling. The energy and excitement of seeing a town transformed and a community that comes together. Even though the fest is over, folks are still talking about the themes and ideas in the films they saw. This week, we're bringing you the last of our interviews with directors whose films were part of the fest. This year's True Life Fund film was Primas, which tells the story of two cousins who experienced sexual violence as teenagers and their journey of healing through art. Director Laura Barry followed cousins Rocio and Aldana from Argentina to her home in Montreal over the course of the film. Barry talks about a pivotal scene where the cousins share their experiences for the first time.
So I want to tell you about this scene because it's important. Yes. You will understand. It's part of the... I cannot separate contents from aesthetics from me. It's one piece. I cannot separate my life of art or teaching because I'm also a full-time teacher, you know, to be in an aunt or to be in a woman, or to be in a particular in the universo, you know, it's the same thing.
It's all connected.
So I put them together and Elena, incredible. So these girls, they say, okay, listen, this, we have you have survived this and you have survived this. Now you are a person, just an amazing person. And I also know that we are a lot, just have been through this. Then I am a filmmaker and we are really need just to share this. So I opened the camera and I asked to my team not to interrupt. And we were in that bedroom. Elena, they spoke for 15 minutes, not stop, I didn't cut. And then it is amazing. And then everything closed little by little, but the pain, as Aldana says in the film, always come back. Mm-hmm. And we understand it's maybe easier, but always come back. And then in each one of us, I believe we have that.
One of the questions I thought of was, how do you think the film resonates with the current social and political climate? And you kind of already said it. It totally does. It's talking about the strength and the resiliency and the beauty of these young women.
This is the things that they taught me, these girls. So each time I pass through the process of creation of a film, much more consciousness and knowledge about the subject. So then Rocio, we were filming in the Cirque du Soleil. Then I was doing a metaphor. I do a metaphor like a play to pretend, you know, symbolic games. Mm-hmm. And then I said, okay, let's go, warriors. And then she says, I fight with a smile. So we are fighters with a smile, you know, the three of us. Mm-hmm. And the whole team, you know, te prometo, we laugh so much and we cry. If people in Me Too are expressing themselves through radio, through internet, others we are doing through art. And chicas, we are doing mimo, theater, contemporary dance, circus, French, English. It was an immersion on what your body can say without using words, you know. And then they say it in a different way. This is another message that they want to say. Yes, we can transform ourselves and the other self, telling the truth.
That was director Laura Barry talking about her film Primas. In Shirkers, director Sandy Tan revisits a film she made as a teenager with her friends in 1992 in Singapore. It would have been Singapore's first independent film, but before it could be finished, Tan's mentor disappeared with the footage. Shirkers follows Tan as the film is returned to her more than 20 years later. She talked to KBIA's Aaron Schrader.
How do you view the experience of making Shirkers differently now than when you originally made the film 25 years ago?
I think I'm a lot less angry now. I think the process of going through 25 years and then, you know, just the process of making the film was kind of therapeutic in a way. I have a much better sense of humor about the whole thing, probably because, you know, we got the negatives back and it was a kind of a happy story. Our lives weren't completely destroyed by this theft. things that moved, you know, in a more interesting angle, I think, in a different direction than it might have gone. Say, if the film had been made and our lives might have been different and everyone who was involved in it might have chosen different paths in the last 25 years. But because, you know, there was no great tragedy involved, I think I see it as a great story. It's like one of those crazy Stranger Than Fiction tales, and it's a strange gift because now I have this story to tell.
So you called this film Shirkers, which is what the original film you made as a teenager was called. Do you see this film as kind of taking the place of the original Shirkers, or like offering some sort of closure to the whole thing?
Exactly, it is. It's also like a meta version of the little film that we tried to make. That was, I should, you know, briefly describe that. That was a crazy road movie about, with me playing S, this teenage killer who is going to find five people that she likes enough to kill in order to take them to some crazy world with her. And it's not dark, though. It's surreal. It's meant to be kind of a dream film. It didn't really make much sense. It was just a surreal road movie. And in this version of Shirkers, I'm also, like, I'm in it. I'm kind of, like, finding all these people, my friends and enemies who had been involved in this film when I was a teenager, and finding them around the world again and putting them together to bring them back to life in a strange way for this version of Shirkers as a grown-up 25 years later around the world rather than just, you know, around Singapore in the original.
So what do you hope the audience takes away from this film?
I just wanted to know that you can just go out and do this. We did this in a place where, I mean, just follow your dreams and just, no matter how crazy they sound and artistic dreams, just go and do it. Like, even if your kid's in this place where nobody's making films, where you don't have anything, I mean, there's no support system, we found a way to do it because we just wanted to get this done. We just really went for it.
That was KBIA's Erin Schrader talking to director Sandy Tan about her film Shirkers. You're listening to Intersection on KBIA. I'm Elena Rivera, a producer on the show. This week, we're bringing you conversations with directors from True False. Director Khalik Ala's film Black Mother explores Jamaican life and culture through an artistic and observant lens. Ala sheds light on motherhood by following a woman throughout her pregnancy. Producer Hannah Rodriguez talked with Ala about the importance of originality and voice in filmmaking.
What exactly can we expect from Black Mother? Tell us a little bit about what Black Mother is about and how long this journey has been for you.
Man, it's about so much, you know. The film has so many different layers of meaning embedded into it. I think that, like, a lot of people will, you know, take a lot of different things away from it, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And also, like, project a lot into it and invest a lot into it to make up their own meanings, too.
The story kind of follows this mother through her, is it her third trimester, and then all the way to the birth of this child?
When I was editing the audio, I said, let me just break it into three parts. And I was thinking, like, oh, okay, that naturally manifested into the idea of three trimesters, you know, and then that helped structure the film once I realized that, you know what I'm saying? And to me, there's that fourth element too, which is the birth. Which is like the four quadrants of the heart, you know, the four chambers. And that's where the film came from. It's really from the heart, the whole film. Like, also, I'm coming with the good news. Like, this is like a lot of good news in this film. Like, also, in this era now, this kid shot up the school. You got all this crazy news every day. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? This film is really positive. And yeah, it was just like something that I felt had to happen.
So do you think you would consider this kind of autobiographical, or is it not kind of that kind of story that you're telling?
My family is in it, but it's not about my family, right. to a really full extent. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're in it to offer a level of sincerity to my relationship to even making the film. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because otherwise it may look like an outsider, you know what I mean, came and made the film. I'm actually a dual citizen with Jamaica,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
Through descent, you know, I did that after Trump was elected, I was like, yo, let me just make sure I got a different citizenship in a different country in case I need to vote.
So how much do you think you learned about Jamaica and the culture through making this film and being there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, when you're embedded in a place, you're always going to, you know, learn so much more, you know, firsthand. Like, mm-hmm. that's what the film did to me. It taught me making this film because, you know, I really went into uncharted territory of Jamaica for me. You know what I'm saying? Different even parts of different parishes and parts of the island that I never used to travel to, because it's customary for people who live in a certain part of the country to never even leave that part of the country and go to the other side.
Oh, you know really? What I'm saying? Yeah.
So I know people in Jamaica that were born in the town and have never really left that area or that parish ever. And I just feel like when people see it, you know, it's going to be like, I've never seen anything like this before. You know, that's what I'm going for. Like, my films are striving to be like the essence of things.
That was director Kalik Ala talking to producer Hannah Rodriguez about his film Black Mother. Directors Lucien Casting Taylor and Verena Puravel wanted to portray cannibal Issei Sagwa in the least sensational way possible. Their film Kaniba is almost entirely shot in close-ups with little sound. Producer Haley Broughton spoke with Casting Taylor about the making of the film.
I noticed that the actual murder of Renee happened in 1981. So I was wondering why you and Verena chose to tell this story now.
When somebody, another filmmaker, Josh Oppenheimer, and at a festival in Vienna started talking to us about him, we became interested, since we were working in Japan anyway, and in meeting him. Verena had forgotten about him and didn't even know that he was still alive. And he'd been working in a lot of sexploitation films in the years since, and we were working with Japanese filmmakers, so we found a way to meet him. And he was at the end of his life. He's still alive, but he's sick. He has diabetes and had a stroke. And so we decided it might be interesting to try to make a film about cannibalism. Anthropologists have written a lot about cannibalism, and obviously we love films about vampires and novels about vampires. But very few people actually have ever tried to understand one human being's cannibalistic desire without being overly judgmental or censorious, or without completely mythologizing it. So that was the challenge we set ourselves. It hadn't really been done with him before. We sort of took the anti-sensationist thing, which is all the more disturbing because there's no obvious moral judgment on our part.
And I wonder what it was like working with the two brothers, because something that stood out to me in the film was when his brother would laugh about, say, trying to kill him, and just the brother seemed to be constantly giggling about them fighting and things like this.
I mean, I think comedy and tragedy go hand in hand. Working with them, it was in a very small space. Their apartment is perhaps 30 feet by 20 feet, and so it's very small. It was very psychologically grueling. You know, every night we both had, especially Verena had, very vivid dreams about cannibals, and she dreamt a number of times that he was eating her, which was obviously disturbing. It got so often, actually, that she began to feel that she understood his desire to eat someone. But still, you know, they're incredibly psychotic, vivid dreams that really beg lots of questions. You know, given all the fantasies and paranoia that hanging out with them might induce in one, you know, it wasn't a particularly relaxing place to hang out, shall we say.
And what are some moments in the film that you hope the audience sticks with them after they leave the theater?
It's not really moments. It's really the whole film. It's really to, you know, we live our lives as we're deeply moralistic creatures. We're deeply judgmental of and scared of people or cultures who are different from us. And so just to try to sort of momentarily hold in abeyance all of the moralisms that make our lives comfortable, and in particular to try to meditate upon an act that seems so heinous that it's almost criminal even to think about it, just to think about what motivates desire like that.
That was producer Haley Broughton talking to director Lucien Casting Taylor about the film Kaniba. Cristina Hanisch is a Romanian filmmaker and director of Antonio y Caterina, a film about her relationship with a 70-year-old Portuguese man during her time studying cinema in Lisbon. Hanish spoke via Skype with KBIA's Katie Kokol.
Can you tell me a little bit about your film?
Yeah, sure. The film centers around our conversations that revolve around themes of love, death, desire, friendship. And the whole film is filmed in the room of the character, Antonio. While his real name is Augusto, the title of the film is Antonio and Katarina. This being our identities that we have assumed for the film. These are nicknames, and this film basically explores the role-playing between a young woman and an older man that have just met each other and are deeply fascinated by each other.
So this kind of love story with a deadline, like you explained it, sounds like something that could probably resonate with a lot of different generations of people. Why tell this story now then?
This film was born out of a very powerful drive to represent this character and to represent our relationship that came suddenly, unexpected, and it's also in an unexpected scenario and between unexpected people. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was part of my cinematic journey, let's say, of learning cinema, of learning how to deal with filmic relationships, and of basically exploring a sudden magical encounter that one has at one point of his time and cannot look away from it.
So how did that change your act of filming a relationship when you were filming your own? Was that a challenge for you in making this film?
Yeah, for sure it was a big challenge because I am more of an introvert. Mm-hmm. And before this, I was working in an observational style more than this participatory one.
Given all of those things, what do you hope audiences at True False take away from your film?
Well, I think it questions issues like power relations, also the filmmakers with the people that they film. I think it will question the limits of filmmaking and of filmic relationships. I think the generational gap also will provoke a lot of thoughts. And I just hope the audience can just fully enter in that room and try to understand Antonio and Katarina without bringing their own preconceptions, and try to navigate in the darkness of that room and of their relationship.
That was KBIA's Katie Kokol talking to director Christina Hanisch about her film Antonio y Katarina. This is Intersection on KBIA. I'm Elena Rivera, a producer on the show. We're celebrating a great fest this year by bringing you interviews with directors from True False. Of Fathers and Sons explores what a father's involvement in a terrorist organization in Syria means for his two sons. Producer Aviva Okeson-Haberman talked to director Tal El Durki over Skype about showing the process of radicalization in his film.
It's belonged to this eternal relation between father and his sons. So this conversation, it's go to everyone who is a son or a father. And I want really like this idea to feel about the kids, how they are innocent, and really not as what like the war propaganda of ISIS present them, that they are already believe of this ideology and they are really talk like an adult. This is not true. And I mean, there are a lot of messages, there are a lot of ideas, there are a lot of moments in the film.
Did this make you change how you viewed your relationship with your father then?
I mean, I have my good memories about my father. He's a refugee in Germany and now, and And I visit him from time to time in the south of Germany. And I'm trying also like to, I understand how he was so much sensitive, so much take care of me, and to make me really bear some belief in peace. So it's always what is changed more, my relation with my son. So that is what's make me more worried about him, more taking care of him, make more dialogue and build more friendship.
When you were filming this, you were in a bit of a dangerous situation.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you didn't want to worry your son. So, you know, what were you able to tell him and how did you kind of navigate those conversations?
No, I mean, I don't know when is the time to tell him about those experience with those two films and how what it's happened and how I protect myself and all of this. Even I mean to sometimes we speak to the people at my age about what has happened and how in some moment what I should to do, and in some other moments I was so close to get killed and all of this fearness every time, like being there and all the time day by night you are really afraid if something can happen. You are not in the front line, but you hear the bombing around, you hear the airstrike, you see the jihadists all the time, you see the bombs, you see everything, and you are just a filmmaker with a camera capturing moments and try to find his direction and try to build his story. And it's very slow happening and it's really need a patience. And I was for a long time away from him. And that was make me like film also more strong that I need to be back home in Berlin to spend time with him and to have a peaceful life. And this is this at one moment, this all will end.
That was producer Aviva Okeson-Haberman talking to director Talal Durki about his film of Fathers and Sons. Three Identical Strangers tells the story of triplets separated at birth. The film explores the nature versus nurture debate by telling the unlikely story of how these brothers reconnected after nearly 20 years. Producer Hannah Rodriguez talked with director Tim Wardell about the process of making the film.
It's an extraordinary story about three brothers separated at birth, raised by completely different families who had no idea that any of them had a sibling, and then reunited completely by chance in 1980s. New York, in 1980 New York. And it's kind of the story of what happens next and also why they were separated.
I noticed that you said that there was a lot of conspiracy theories about why this story hasn't been told yet. Could you kind of like talk a little bit about that and what your journey was to finding this film?
So I was working in development at Raw, the production company that made the film, and someone, a producer called Grace Hughes Hallett, brought in the story. And instantly, when I saw it, I realized it was one of the most extraordinary stories I'd ever come across. And the second thought really was, why has no one told this story before? And over the 5-year journey it took us to take this from the initial idea to making the film, I kind of began to realize that there were a huge number of reasons why it hadn't been made. I mean, we ultimately discovered that there were three attempts by major US networks, two in the 80s, one in the 90s, to tell this story. And in each case, it was shut down. And the people who worked on it were never really told why it was shut down. It did make us quite paranoid when we were making the film that we were going to be shut down at any moment.
Yeah, because it is such a complex story, and I could see how a lot of different people would maybe not want this story to be broadcasted on this kind of level.
You know, I really want people to see this film as cold as possible, with as little pre-knowledge as they can, because I think if you go in like that, you know, it really does take you on a journey from one what you feel the film's going one way and it goes somewhere completely different.
What were you trying to accomplish, like were you trying to like tackle one of these concepts, or did you kind of just plan to tell their story how it was?
It's a combination of the two. I mean, I'm a big believer that documentaries should be
you know, on one level entertaining, and they should take you on a journey. And I think that the best documentaries also tackle wider issues. I personally, I'm not as big a fan of documentaries that are just issue driven. It's like, here's the issue, now where's the story? Mm-hmm. We were more like, here's the story, what are the issues that it touches on? When people were bidding for the film, and, you know, it's been bought by distributors, so it's going to be in theaters in the US. One of the things they said is, oh, the film explores the nature-nurture debate, and no film or documentary we can think of tackles it, or certainly not one recently. And I kept thinking, well, that must be wrong, because, you know, nature-nurture is such a universal, massive mm-hmm. theme. But I mean, I still can't think of ones. I mean, there are the ones that sort of tackle it very tangentially, but this is, you know, on one level quite explicitly about that, about whether you're genetics or your environment make you the person you are.
That was producer Hannah Rodriguez talking to director Tim Wardell about his film Three Identical Strangers. Thank you for joining us here on Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. And thank you to directors Laura Bari, Sandy Tan, Kali Gala, Christina Hanisch, Talal Durki, and Tim Wardell. On our website right now, you can listen to interviews with directors from Crime and Punishment, America, Bisbee 17, La Flor de la Vida, and more. Outside of our true-false coverage, host Sarah Shariari spoke to an MU law professor to help explain the terms surrounding Governor Eric Greitens' indictment and upcoming trial. You can find the interview with Professor Ben Trachtenberg, as well as true-false coverage, at kbia.org. Did you know that you can subscribe to Intersection on Apple Podcasts and listen on the go wherever you are? To find us, search for Intersection KBIA and hit subscribe. That way you'll never miss an episode. Our producers are Abby Ivory Gagne, Aviva Okeson Haberman, Haley Broughton, and Hannah Rodriguez. Our music is Montana Skies. I'm Elena Rivera for Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM.